Vayera elav Hashem be'elonei mamre v'hu yoshev pesach ohel kechom hayom. Hashem appeared to him, Avraham, in the plains of Mamre, while he was sitting at the entrance of his tent in the heat of the day.
Hello, I hope I haven't kept you waiting. Come right over. Chair by the window. Comfortable?
Shalom again, and welcome again to Torah Tidbits Audio. I'm your host, Phil Chernofsky. I'm your editor, Phil Chernofsky. And this show is for Parshat Vayera. Vayera. Also known as Vayera. I say again because I almost finished the whole first half of the show. And then something went on the program. It stopped responding. And when I checked the file to see how much had been saved, it was practically nothing. So I lost close to 20 minutes of recording, which took me a lot longer than 20 minutes. But then I was searching around in the computer files, and I found the last 5.5 minutes or so, which was the last piece of recording, was in a temporary folder, and that I was able to retrieve. And other than that, doing it again. So that's the story. Although I didn't have to tell you that story, because you would never know that this is being done a second time. But I like when I tell you, and I like when you should know. I like that you should know. So let's go back a step. Well, not really go back a step. Let's continue from there. Recording and first broadcast. Second recording and first broadcast. Yom Chamishi, Thursday, the 16th day of Mar Cheshvan, 5773, corresponding to the 1st of November. Happy birthday, Cousin Ellie, and anyone else with a birthday on November 1st, or on the 16th of Mar Cheshvan, or both. Psalm 130, Tehillim Kuf Lamed. Shir Hama'alot Mima'amakim Kraticha Adonai. Adonai Shimavakoli, Tehiena Aznecha Kashuvot Lekol Tachanunai. Imavonot Tishmorya Adonai Mia Amod. Ki imcha hasalicha lema'an tivarei. Ki viti Adonai kiveta nafshi velidvaro hochalti. Nafshi l'Adonai mi shomerim laboker, shomerim laboker. Yachel Yisrael el Adonai ki im Adonai hachesed v'harbe imo fedut. Vehu yifde et Yisrael mikol avonotav. Achenu kol beit Yisrael hanetunim batzara uvashivya. Ha'omedim bein bayam uvein bayabasha, ha'makom yirachem aleihem, v'yotzieim mitzara lirvacha, u'me'afela l'ora, u'mishibud l'geula, hashta ba'agala uvizman kariv, v'nomar amen. Parshat Vayera definitely shared the stage this week with Hurricane Sandy, to the point where back on Monday, Tuesday, when I was developing the lead tidbit for the hard copy, I was going to do one page on Avraham Avinu and one page on Hurricane Sandy. And that would be front page and page 4, which is usually where the lead tidbit is contained. But I started with Avraham, and even though my original title was split lead : Avraham and Sandy, by the time I finished what I wanted to say about Avraham, page 1 and 4 were taken. So I changed the title to Avraham Avinu, We Are He or Him. I had a debate. I called my cousin Yaffa, who is the heir to my Aunt Phyllis's grammar love, and she, Basof, at the end, recommended he rather than him, even though it sounds funny. And I also called the Hebrew University English Department, which never got back to me, and the Jerusalem Post, and they confirmed that he would be correct, even though it sounds funny. Knock, knock, who's there? It's me, is what people say, but that's not correct. It is I is correct. And that's something that my Aunt Phyllis, Aleha HaShalom, used to always point out to us when we said things that were not exactly grammatically correct. So that became the title, Avraham Avinu, We Are He, and I'll talk about that, Amir Tzashem, in the second part of the show. What I want to start now is with reflections, personal reflections on Hurricane Sandy, from someone who was not there, but from someone who, like most of us here, have family and friends in the area that was hit by the hurricane, and access to the internet to see the clips from Fox News and CNN and NBC and CBS. I actually turned on to the live stream of WINS Winds 1010 New York, gave them a couple of 22-minute chunks of my life, and they gave me not the whole world, but they gave me a very insider's view of what was going on in New York City. So it definitely affected secondarily all of us here. And I was hoping, if I couldn't make it in that lead tidbit position, to find some space when I finally finished all of Torah Tidbits late Tuesday. But there was no space left. I had other things that I had to put in. And therefore, Sandy sort of got frozen out of Torah Tidbits this week. And then I said with a smile to myself that Torah Tidbits audio is still available, and I was going to spend time talking about the thoughts that ran through my mind earlier this week. And that's the beauty for me of a Torah Tidbits audio. It's the beauty for me when I have to give a shiur on Shabbat or a shiur here at the center during the week, that I'm able to, the Hebrew word would be mashlim, I'm able to fill in things that I wanted to write but wasn't able to write or didn't have enough room to write it or got busy with something else. And it gives me a second, third, or fourth chance to express my thoughts and ideas, which personally I'm glad for. So the first thing that struck me is a certain irony of timing, and I'll tell you what I mean. First of all, back on Shmini Atzeret, we in Israel and Jews all over the world said Tfilat Geshem, prayer for rain, and began acknowledging and stating that God is the Mashiv HaRuach Umorid HaGeshem. He is the one that causes the wind to blow and the rain to fall. I find it hard to imagine a Jew who davens anywhere when he said earlier this week, Mashiv HaRuach Umorid HaGeshem, would not have thought about Sandy, because it epitomized more than that. I used to think epitomize meant the top, but it's really not. But anyway, it brings the point in spades of God's function as the one who causes the wind to blow and the rain to fall. We certainly have seen, some of us secondhand and some of us firsthand, the terrible destruction that both wind and rain can cause. And that brings to mind a very crucial word in our petition for rainfall, when we ask for God to give tal umatar, dew and rain, livracha, as a blessing. I'm now going to plug in the, even though it'll be out of order, the 5.5 minutes or so that I found survived the crash of the program, because I listened to the beginning and it picks up from this word, and then I'll continue afterwards, even though the thoughts are going to be out of the original order. When I first came to live in Israel, I was exposed in different areas to Edot Mizrach, Sephardi shuls. I did not do a lot of davening in them, but enough to notice something that they do. And I've seen it in Ashkenazi shuls attended by people who are from Edot Mizrach. And that is in the repetition of the Amidah, when the Chazan says, Mashiv HaRuach, Morid HaGeshem, they all call out Livracha, for a blessing. It's not the Ashkenazi custom, but it's a nice custom, and I've done it. And there is a very important message behind it and a feeling behind it. If you acknowledge God as the one who causes the wind to blow and the rain to fall, your immediate response is make it God as a blessing. The Mishnah, further in Masechet Ta'anit, tells the story of Choni HaMa'agel, Choni the circle drawer. The story goes that there was a severe drought in Israel, and people turned to Choni, who was known as a very pious person and very close to God, and they asked him to pray. And he prayed that it should rain, and it didn't. So he stood up and he drew a circle around himself, and he said to God, I would not think of asking you this on my own in this way, but your children have turned to me to pray to you because they know how special our relationship is. I'm editorializing a little. And I am not leaving this circle until it rains. And a few drops came down. Choni says, that's not what I was referring to. I was talking about a lot of rain. And it came down in hurricane force torrents. Choni said, that's not what I'm talking about either. I am talking about blessed, beneficial rain at the right pace, in the right quantities, to fill the cisterns and the water receptacles, the reservoirs, and it came down exactly the way he asked. And it kept raining and kept raining and kept raining, and the drought was over, and it kept raining and it kept raining. And finally, it was so drenching that the people turned to Choni and they said, just like you prayed that it should rain, please pray that it should stop raining. And his answer was, that far I don't go. It's raining, take it as a blessing, and don't complain. And certainly don't pray to God that it should stop raining. That's what comes to my mind. I am not making any kind of statement relating anything to the recent experience with Hurricane Sandy. I am just sharing with you thoughts that came to me as I was watching and listening to the reports of the hurricane, and as I was talking to some family and friends. Of course, on a lighter side, the conversation with these specific relatives and Friends was the Giants' sweep of the Tigers in the World Series. I actually got an email from a cousin of mine, a cousling, that's a child of a cousin. I made up the words, so don't look it up. And he said, what's this with you and the Giants? I was listening to Nachum Siegel on AM and the JM, JM and the AM, and he said, Phil Chernofsky in Yerushalayim is probably smiling this morning, this was Monday morning, after the victory of the Giants in the World Series. And he was right, I was smiling. And even though it was a very difficult thing to watch or to listen to the games on our time zone, we did it. And it was a very exciting thing. It got very much bumped from the thoughts of people because of the hurricane. I actually thought that perhaps the Giants went on to win four straight, not to prolong the games, because that would have brought them right through the period of the hurricane. And even though Detroit and San Francisco were not part of this, still, it would be a little insensitive to play baseball with abandon when so much of the country was in trouble. So that was some of the weirder thoughts that ran through my mind, that that was a good thing the Giants knocked off the Tigers in four games. So they were able to finish Sunday, and then the hurricane took over the news. Okay, this is weird because you're hearing something that I said towards the end of that first half of the show, which got erased, and now I put it in before the end of the first half. And I consider the talking about the World Series to be the flippant side of a very serious week with the devastation of the hurricane. And I am partially sorry for it, and then maybe not, because that's my style of talking and mixing thoughts. But I want to go back a serious step here. And that is that the other part of the date, I mentioned just the Shmini Atzeret mentioning of God as the wind blower and the rainmaker. And by the way, not by the way, it is a very important concept of Judaism that we acknowledge not only that God created the world and set it in motion, but he also created the laws of nature, and most importantly, he maintains a constant supervision of the creation on an ongoing basis, to the point where we say in davening that God is mechadesh b'chol yom tamid ma'aseh v'reshit. He renews the acts of creation every day. Exactly what that means we could discuss some other time. But its appropriateness here is that we believe in God, we believe that God created the world, and we believe that he is the one who causes the wind to blow and the rain to fall. We must see God's hand, his controlling hand, in events that happen to us in this world. And that certainly includes the recent Hurricane Sandy. But then there's more. Irony, we in Israel, about 10 days ago, began asking God to give beneficial rain. V'tein talu matar livracha. Outside of Israel, that petition does not come until the beginning of December. We are the ones that so far have had balmy, warm, sunny, clear skies. 2 days ago it was clear, yesterday it was kind of cloudy, today is mixed, but rain has not really started for us yet, even though we need it and even though we're asking for it. And the east coast of the United States got much, much more rain than they really want in a destructive form. I read on the internet the fringe benefit that came as a result of the storm, the lowering of the price of gasoline. But that's sort of not very comforting for people whose homes have been destroyed or damaged, and certainly not for those people who have suffered casualties in their family or circle of friends. It's not a not an easy thing. But anyway, that's the way it works. Then comes tomorrow's date. Remember, I am recording on Thursday. Tomorrow, Friday, is the 17th of Mar Cheshvan, which is the traditional date that the flood began, even though the Torah says on the 17th day of the second month, and we usually count the second month as Iyar, following Nisan as the first month, but the commentaries explain that applies from the Exodus period and onward. And here we're talking about the flood, which happened many generations earlier, where the second month was Mar Cheshvan, following Tishrei, especially if you accept the opinion that the world was created in Tishrei. So the 17th of Mar Cheshvan has an association with destructive torrential rains, and yet in the Mishnah in Ta'anit, there's another reference to the 17th of Mar Cheshvan. There it's the opposite. If it has not rained yet until the 17th of Mar Cheshvan, the Mishnah says individual Jews would take upon themselves to fast and to strengthen their prayers on behalf of the community that God should bless us with beneficial rainfall. Hold that thought. We'll be right back with more Torah Tidbits audio. You are listening to Torah Tidbits audio for Parshat Vayera, and I just wanted to sort of summarize a last point about rain, Hurricane Sandy, etc. Before that, a quick comment about the opening and closing of the opening of each half. Started many months ago, trying to take something from the Parsha. Last week, I departed from that. The opening of the show was the streets of San Francisco. An old detective police show from the 70s with Carl Malden. Don't leave home without it. And the second half was from The Land of Giants, a science fiction show. And that obviously was a reference to the San Francisco Giants. I can't resist these things. And actually, there are some people who get a kick out of them, especially Mark from Rochester, New York, who I sometimes play for, and the rest of you are just listening in. This week, the opening and the opening of each half has to do with the Parsha, but only by association. And if I remember, I'll tell you what they are next week. So if anyone wants to write to me at tta@ouisrael.org or any of my other addresses, tta, Torah Tibbetz Audio, at ouisrael.org, and tell me what these themes are, we'll see about getting a prize to you. But in the meantime, let's go back to the serious note of rain. Rain, water, is just an absolutely essential, big, big component of our lives. I'm not even going to go into all of it, but look at it from just the following. there is bad rain and no rain. And that means destructive rain and the destructive nature of a drought. And those are opposite sides of the same side of a coin, on the opposite side of which is good, beneficial rain. That's what we want. That's what we ask God for. And we should never lose sight of that. It's not, please let it rain, but please let it rain beautiful, beneficial, and plentiful rain. And may it be in all the right places, etc., etc. That's the bottom line, and to understand and to relate to the fact that Judaism takes this very seriously, as I tried to explain last week, I think it was, about the rules and regulations of Talu Matar and Mashiva Ruach, where by saying that for us here in Israel today, you daven mincha, you leave out two words, Talu Matar. You say instead, v'tein bracha, give a blessing. Entire Amidah of 19 blessings is invalidated, and the whole thing has to be repeated. That's how seriously we take the topic of rainfall. The other thing I would just add is that if we would appreciate this, it would be much better if we would appreciate it without the need for a hurricane like Sandy to remind us of it. If we remember these things with a drizzle and a breeze, we don't need hurricane force winds and torrential rains. Okay, let's move on to Avraham Avinu. And mention a few things about the Seder. And I'll try to give you a little bit of the essence of what I tried to get across in the lead tidbit. But before that, we have right at the beginning of the Seder an episode of hospitality and an episode of Bikur Cholim, visiting the sick. Earlier is visiting the sick. That is based on Midrashic sources that since it says, and God appeared to Avraham in the heat of the day, but does not say anything that he said to him, which on all other Vayera Elav Hashem, when God appears, it's to say something. Go outside and look at the stars. Your children will be this. You will have a child. Whatever. And the same thing goes for any other prophetic vision and visit and statement. So here, nothing was said. And that prompts the Mepharshim to say God's purpose was not to say something to Avraham, but was to show us what to emulate from him, capital H, is the quality of Bikur Cholim. And this is learned from the fact that it says, Vayera Elav, God appeared to him. Using a pronoun means an antecedent. The antecedent comes from the end of Parshat Lech Lecha, where Avraham had just circumcised himself at the age of 99 and was ailing from that circumcision. And that's another reason that we say this demonstrates God's act of Bikur Cholim to teach us the act of Bikur Cholim. There's a small piece within that that I love, and it makes an important point as well. Kechom Hayom, in the heat of the day, the commentaries say that God made the day exceptionally hot so that there should be no travelers on the road, so that Avraham would not be bothered by having to tend to wayfarers and would be able to rest and recuperate. Apparently, when God saw how agitated Avraham was, that there was nobody around to greet, He brought the three malachim, the three angels, in the guise of humans, so that Avraham would be able to be hospitable to them. And you see it in that pasuk of, and he said, God, please don't go away, I'll be right back. And we learn from that that hachnasat orchim, welcoming guests, is greater than kabbalat pnei hashchinah. And this is an inspiration towards one of the hallmarks of Judaism, as epitomized by Avraham and Sarah, that of hospitality. Jews are very hospitable. It's in their blood, it's in their genes, it's in our religion. And Baruch Hashem, we see many, many examples of this kind of generous kindness extended to other people. Anyway, what I wanted to say about God sending the people after he prevented people from coming, and he could have sent angels in the guise of angels, they didn't have to be people, but that was all orchestrated to the benefit of Avraham. What you learn from there is a very important lesson of Bikur Cholim. You go visit someone in the hospital, and your natural tendency is to be very solicitous of the person and to do things for the person and fuss over the person, and that works for some people, but not for everybody. If fluffing up a pillow is something that a person would appreciate who's in a hospital bed, then you do that. And if you happen to run into a person whose nature it is to resent someone fluffing a pillow for him, I could do it myself, or I don't need your help, then you have to resist. You have to cease and desist. Because you're not supposed to be doing things that you think the person wants. You're supposed to actually be doing things that the person wants. And you have to be sensitive, not to come with a playbook of how to behave when you're visiting a person in the hospital, how do you behave when you're visiting a sick person convalescing at home, and play it by ear to see what's good thing to do and what's not, and take that lead from God. If God first thought, so to speak, that making the day intensely hot to prevent visitors was to benefit Avraham, he realized it was not, and he switched. And I think that's a beautiful lesson which we need to apply in our treatment of guests and of our treatment of each other. Just as an extension of this idea, when you do something for someone else, you have to make sure that that person likes what's happening and not you're projecting yourself. I think of a married couple where the one partner makes a surprise birthday party for the other. That person hates surprise parties or hates being reminded about his birthday. So you don't do that. But when you do it without taking into account the other person's dislike of it, what you're doing is projecting and saying, I would like a surprise party for my birthday, for my special birthday, and I'll show that, you don't actually say this, but I'll show that by making a surprise party a couple of months earlier for that other person. It doesn't work like that. You have to find the key to doing something for the other person, what the other person appreciates, even if it's not you. And that goes for a lot of things. Pirkei Avot, chapter 5, says, Avraham Avinu was tested with 10 tests of faith and withstood them all to teach us and to show us the great love he had for God. What were those 10 tests? Different opinions. The list is really more than 10, and some choose the ones only mentioned in the Torah, and others go back to the story of the fiery furnace with Nimrod, and others go beyond the Akedah, even though at the Akedah God said, now I know and I don't have to test you anymore, that there were tests after. the Akedah. So we're not exactly sure which the tests were. We know some of them. We know most of them. But that's not the point. The point is that there were some of these tests, which are acknowledged as being tests of faith, which the Mishnah testifies Avraham passed those tests, when his behavior in those particular tests is challenged and questioned by various commentaries. For example, when Avraham asks Sarah to pose as brother and sister rather than husband and wife, there are commentaries who say this was a terrible thing for him to do. He put Sarah into jeopardy, and he should have played it straight and introduced themselves as husband and wife, and see what happens from there. Others criticize him for going down to Egypt for the famine that was recorded in last week's Sedra, when he was sent to Eretz Yisrael, to Canaan, and maybe the famine was a test to see if he could stick it out. And he didn't. He went to Egypt and came back wealthy. So some people answer it one way and some people answer it another way. But what you have to deal with is the fact that the Mishnah trumps the later commentaries, some of whom say he didn't behave the right way. So how could that be in light of the fact that the Mishnah testifies that he came out with high marks from his test? My answer to this is that there is a difference between a test of faith, and that does not have to, not a difference, that there is a way that a person acts in a test, and a way that he reacts, or a way that he acts and the effect that it has on him. When something happens to test someone, he has to act, and sometimes he behaves in the right way and sometimes he chooses wrong. That's one issue. The other issue, maybe the more important issue, is how did this experience affect his faith in God? If his faith remains strong, then even if his action in this test was in error, he still passed the test of faith. He didn't behave the right way, and therefore we have to learn to do things differently. Or he did behave the right way, and therefore we have to learn to emulate that. But differently is, what did it do to his belief in God? And, you know, let's go back to the Gulf War here in Israel. I was talking to somebody about it recently, so it's on my mind. Sealed room, gas masks. You did do it, you didn't do it. The silent frequency on the radio, which the government provided that religious Jews can turn on their radio to a certain frequency, and it remained silent, which means it didn't disturb anyone on Shabbat, unless there was an azaka, an alert, in which case the alert was broadcast on this silent channel. So you were able to have a radio in your apartment on, but it stayed quiet unless there was need for the special emergency broadcast. So some people did that, and other people said, no, I'm not going to leave my radio on, it's Shabbat, and whatever. Which of the two options in each case was the right one to do is one thing. What did the experience do to your belief in God? Did you go into the sealed room, put on your gas mask, and panic? Or did you go in having done whatever you were supposed to do, and now have bitachon, faith and trust in God, that you won't be hurt? There's a difference. And the same thing goes with all of these tests for Avraham. The lead tidbit this week was about personalizing and internalizing all of these tests. Let's take the, this could be one or two tests of Avraham. The fact that he and Sarah were not able to have children. The fact that God had told him that he will have children. The fact that after 10 years in Eretz Yisrael, Sarah gives her handmaiden Hagar to Avraham, that he could father a child from her, which she suffered ridicule from Hagar, and Hagar was chased away, and then she was sent back. And then when Yishmael was born, there was a problem after Yitzchak was born of a bad influence on Yitzchak. These are trials and tribulations that Avraham and Sarah had. But these exist today in many families. What about a couple who very much want to have a child, but they can't? And fertility treatments and tests and adoption as an option, or IVF, or any of the various things that are coming out all the time, these are trials and tribulations that a person today is put through. It's a little different detail-wise from what Avraham and Sarah went through, but that doesn't change the essence of this kind of test. Wanting children and not being able to have children, or it being very difficult to have children. And, just to take another one, take your son, your only son, your beloved son, Isaac, and bring him as an offering on Har HaMoriah. Even the word sacrifice is used today of victims of terror, or victims in a situation of the army. And there are people who are tested in a similar way that Avraham was tested, and from one side, maybe even more, because they lost their son. They lost their son. Avraham's son was spared. But it's the same kind of test, from one way of looking at it. And what does it do to the person? There are people in Israel who have lost children in various terror attacks or in wars, whose behavior is exemplary, who are inspiring in the way they speak and the way they write. And to me, that is an example of passing a test of faith. Not everybody comes out that way. What I sort of summarized things at was, we have to go back to that Mishnah and personalize it with 10, maybe not 10, 3, 5, maybe 15, 20, whatever the number is, tests God tested, fill in your own name. And can you say you withstood them all, or you withstood most of them? Or you began to question things. How could God let this happen? How could he do this and that? That's a test of faith. And that is something that we have to not just read about for Avraham Avinu, but we have to realize that he is the progenitor of the Jewish nation. And more than that, we each are him. He. So this emulation of our patriarchs and matriarchs, or letting their actions be a model for what we do, is a very real kind of thing. We have to be hospitable because that's part of being Jewish. It's a good thing to do. It's an act of chesed. And that's not in the category of the testing of faith. That's another side. But we have things that happen which test us, and we have to withstand those tests as well. We, the descendants of Avraham and Sarah, Yitzchak, Yaakov, Rivka, Rachel, and Leah, but also we are made up from their essence as well. And on that note, I wish you a Shabbat Shalom, Lehish Tameah.